Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
My name is Patrick Martins. You're listening to The Main Course on the Heritage Radio Network. Very excited to have you guys listening today. We have Stu Sewell on with us, the chef of Community Food and Juice, one of our favorite restaurants, also located in the neighborhood where there is a lack of great restaurants. So we'll have him on in a couple minutes. Very excited. It's his first time on the network. We got Jack in the studio. Old days.
Old days. Every once in a while, I just have to pop up on the main course, you know?
No, you can tell the quality is just a little bit higher when Jack is back there.
I sleep a little bit less during your show than all the other engineers.
Oh, very nice. I know. I'm always asking if people haven't fallen asleep yet. But man, we just came out of a fiery meeting. We are really revisiting a little bit, experimenting, the news section of the site with more, you know, short format, unedited pieces that kind of like interview man on the street or famous luminary or, most important, Heritage Radio Network hosts on the major issues of our day. You know, and we figured like it's so challenging to try to come up with new news stories like about bison or about, you know, the Rust Belt, you know, but what about current events that cover bison and the Rust Belt and, you know, the war in the Gaza and, you know, really the moments of the hour. So pretty exciting. And you can go to our homepage and hear some of those pieces, including one where I was even interviewed about brisket. So we actually, I don't know if you heard this too, the New York Times just called New York the brisket capital of the world.
I hadn't heard that.
That's or of the me. Yeah, of the U.S. For barbecue. So pretty fun. So very exciting to have you in. Thanks so much for coming all the way up from Upper East Side.
Yeah, no problem. Glad to be here.
So tell us about, communicate to our listeners a little bit about Community Food and Juice. It's kind of like a university restaurant.
It's right off Columbia Campus, 113th and Broadway. We gear towards health food, really market-driven. I go to the market two markets a week and try to get most of the produce, if not all of the produce that we use through our restaurant. So we try to keep it in the tri-state area farms, just the local sustainable people that farm right, do the practices right. We try to support them, and in turn we get amazing product from them that we can then turn around and serve to our customers.
Do you do Green Market on like 14th Street, the Union Square Market, and then is there an Uptown one?
Or? Yeah, I do the Union Square Market on 14th every Wednesday, and then Thursdays I go to, there's one up on 115th and Broadway. It's a little smaller, but you get to know the shops a little bit better when it's smaller like that.
So when you became the head chef, Zach Kell, who'd been on the show, was the chef before you. Mm-hmm. So does he take you to the farmers to introduce you to them, or did you already know them, or do you set out on your own and just form new relationships?
No, definitely. I mean, we worked together for a little while. So, I mean, I went down there multiple times with him. If he had something going on, I would fill in for him and run down there and pick up the produce and stuff. So he definitely like walked me through it and introduced me to all of the purveyors that we use and other markets that we don't use a lot, but just to familiarize me with the whole thing.
Now, do farmers treat you any different because they are your restaurant account? I mean, do they know? You're obviously buying a lot.
Yeah.
So do they save stuff for you? Do you wipe them out of certain inventory? I mean, do you ever have to call them in advance to give them a heads up what you need? Or how does those relationships work?
I'll generally just speak to them, ask them what they're going to be having in next week, how the farm's looking. I generally go in before I even order anything, just talk to them about what's going on with the farm, mm-hmm. You know, how certain things are growing, when they think the crops will start changing, things like that. And then they definitely allow me, I think, to clear them out a little bit more. I don't call ahead or anything, but I just, you know, I go in if I like something, like, because I get an idea from the week before, and I'll just go in and wipe them out of certain things that they knew I was coming for sure.
And do you have to get there super early to get the best stuff, or do you have relationships with these farms that they save stuff for you?
It's best to get there super early. It depends on what I have going on at the restaurant. I always try to make it there before about 11 o'clock, because you start going later than that, it gets hot during the day, stuff starts to wilt. And then also they start to get like low on certain things.
And then you just put the stuff in the 1-9 train and go north and unload it?
New York City cabs, they hate me. You should see their face when you load them up full of produce and then tell them you're going all the way uptown.
That's funny. So tell us about a little bit. So Community Food and Juice, it's a lovely big place on the Upper West Side, and it's actually owned by two very creative New York City restaurateurs, Neil and Dee Dee. Mm-hmm. They also own Clinton Street Bakery, which we sell a case of hams to a week, so I know them well. So tell us, what is it like working with them? I mean, this isn't a big corporation. This isn't some nameless, Aramark, boss or boards of directors. Mm-hmm. It's just a husband and wife team that have opened a couple of restaurants. So how do you navigate that, and what's it like working with them?
I enjoy the smaller feel of it. I feel like I get more one-on-one, a little more direction, and it's more direct, which I appreciate too. You know, Dee Dee's, she tells you exactly what she wants. So there's no corporate BSing around it. You know, she'll lay it out to you, and you make sure that you do what she says, which I have a lot of respect for somebody like that. So I enjoy that. And then, Neil, he's incredibly creative. I mean, everything he does is just really, really delicious, really talented. And it's fun. He comes in about once a week and works with me. And, shows me, goes over what he thinks is right, what he thinks is wrong. So it's nice. You know, you get a lot more of the one-on-one and kind of direct working with, instead of the corporate where you just pass and everything's passed down through paperwork, you know. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Now, you have about 30 people working under you in the kitchen. I mean, was that a tough transition to go from Zach's right-hand man, or not even there, and then Zach's right-hand man, now all of a sudden you're in charge? Like, how do you navigate the management with all those different types of personalities and opinions?
I had a relationship. I was, before I took over, I was the PM sous chef, so I only had like a really strong relationship with the night guys. And so it was definitely a process, just getting to know the different personalities and, you know, having to be their boss when you weren't directly their boss. So, you know, it takes a little time. You got to, you know, work hard, earn their trust, show them that you're not just going to sit there and tell them to do something when you're not willing to do it yourself. So I try to work with them as much as possible, sit down, talk to them, you know, it's be personable too. I like to try to do that, you know, ask them about their kids, how their family's doing, you know, because I feel like a lot of that time you don't get that with a boss. So I try to kind of be personal with them as well.
And does it get tense? I mean, it must get tense on the line. I mean, what are the types of things that break down at a restaurant?
It's one of those things that, you know, the food industry is nonstop, you know, so even if you're having a bad day and you're messing stuff up, the customers don't understand that. The customers don't want to hear that. They want food. So, I mean, that's definitely, with that many personalities, you know, you get a lot of days that somebody's having a bad day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that can create some tension. But, you work through it. You try to help them out, you know. Try to, like, I go back to, you know, something wrong at home. Do you need some a day off so you can take care of whatever you need so you can come back fresh? You get just people that just come in and just are grumpy and be grumpy sometimes. Mm-hmm. And you got to send them home and tell them to come back the next day. You work through it.
Send them to the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Time out. Give them time out for a little while.
So now you come from Seattle, and then you move to New York. Tell us about some of your key food movements through your food moments. Sorry, through your history, growing up and stuff. Like whether you were super young and you tasted a peach, or studying under another chef that you learned things. Like, what were some of the real seminal moments in your career as a chef?
I mean, probably the most poignant one was I was about 14, and my grandparents have a cabin up in the Cascade Mountains, and there's a little resort next to it, and I started cooking there during the summers, just a summer job, you know, and that's what kind of, what it wasn't fancy, it was just, you know, turn and burn burgers, and, you know, but we made chilies, we made soups there, but it was just really small mom and pop shop, and it just got me really interested in food. I started to learn how to do it so I could always, you know, progress from that. I tried a lot of other things. I tried computer stuff. I did construction work. Didn't like sitting behind a desk. Didn't like being outside when it rained. So I just kind of migrated back to the kitchen. So since about the time I was 14, every summer until I was 17, I worked in that spot. And then when I started finishing up high school, I just started cooking because that's what I knew how to do. And then shortly after high school, I decided that cooking was what I wanted to do. So I went down to Le Cordon Bleu in Portland, Oregon, mm-hmm. and went through that program. While I was in that program, I got to work for a French master chef he's probably murdered me. I'm going to mispronounce his name, but Philippe Bouleau, mm-hmm. I believe it's close to that.
This was at Cordon Bleu?
No, this was at the Heathman Restaurant or Heathman Hotel in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
So it was I got the job through the school because, you know, they took on interns and students and stuff. So I did that, and that was incredible. I don't know if anybody's ever worked with a French master or a French chef or just in general. It's a lot of personality. So, you know, they whip you. It's almost like boot camp working for him. So
we chef.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. I've never been yelled at by such a little man, and it felt so small. He would,
funny.
He was probably maybe 5'2", but he'd yell at you like he was 7 foot tall.
Oh my God. Because he cared, right?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. It was incredible to see. If he didn't like somebody, he wouldn't say two words to him. The more he liked somebody, the more he'd yell at him about what they were doing wrong.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So, once you start to care.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. I mean, like, we were just having this heated radio discussion, which hadn't happened in a long time. And, yeah, it's because everyone cares, you mm-hmm. know. It's like it really gets people to be, you know, self-righteous or, you know, really convey their opinions. So, wow, Portland, what a great place to work. I mean, how the hell did that become such a food town? It's probably one of the two or three best cities to eat out in.
It's one of my favorite cities to eat in.
Yeah.
I mean, the food, I think it just started with the food carts. I think they were a little more lax with allowing food carts to come in. And then they just started taking over. I don't know if you've ever been, but they, I mean, mm-hmm. they just have blocks where it's just the whole block is food carts.
Yeah.
And so it's just, I think there's just so many choices that the competition really had to step their game up. And they really answered and came back with some pretty incredible street food.
Yeah, street food. Yeah, there's street carts in all so many different neighborhoods, and yeah, they congregate in sections, mm-hmm. so it becomes like many restaurants in one place. And I guess the food of the general area there is special mm-hmm. too, right? The whole Pacific Northwest.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty unique.
It's a lot of that's where I really started to learn a lot about like farm to table food, green market food. I mean, it's a lot bigger. I think it's just because there's more space to grow, so there's a few more farms and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it just allows for a lot of incredible product to work with. You know, that area, it's number one mushroom foraging in the country. So you can go out there, one of the best. I'm not sure if it's actually number one. I think it might be.
Isn't there true that there's some huge mushroom that lives under the ground in Oregon? Like, it's kind of connected. I mean, yeah, I guess it's just the general temperature. It's like a rainforest there, mm-hmm. right? Kind of just leads to
nice and damp, so the fungus can just really take off.
Wow. Unbelievable. Well, we are on air at the Heritage Radio Network with Stu Sewell, the chef of Community Food and Juice. I am your host, Patrick Martins, and we're going to take a break and come right back to the main course.
You're listening to She's Flexible by Hard Bodies, and this is the main course on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hey, my name is Betsy Andrews, executive editor of Savera Magazine, and I am hanging out at the coolest, most delicious place in the world, heritageradionetwork.org.
All right. Well,
she's not really here.
Yeah, I was going to say, is she sitting here? Is she in the back with Jack?
She was hanging out here.
I thought Steve Jenkins was there for a while.
Yeah, he's back here with me.
So, I am Patrick Martins. You are listening to The Main Course on the Heritage Radio Network. It's a nonprofit organization, so please make your donation today if you enjoy this program or other programs like it. We have so many great programs on the network. So, we are in studio today with Stu Sewell, the chef of Community Food and Juice. And he is talking about the interesting restaurant and his interesting roots in the Pacific Northwest, growing up at a little shack that made food over the summers. It's a great way to learn. I imagine, like, kissing girls outside, like, the hamburger fryer and then french fry fryer.
Down by the lake at night.
Yeah, exactly. So now Community Food and Juice is always seasonal, so is the fall menu change significant, or is it just that it's changing so much all the time, it's constantly a menu in flux, or does, like, September Labor Day signify, like, 10 dishes off, 10 dishes on?
Fall is definitely our biggest menu change. I'd say probably about 75% of our menu will switch. I mean, every place has their staples that we won't change, but it's definitely our biggest change because, I mean, that's when the markets are the greatest. You know, if we don't make big changes, then we're just wasting and not really doing what we should be doing with the food.
So how does that go? I mean, take us a little bit through that, from food cost and what to charge to tasting and all that.
It starts with just me and Neil collaborating. I give him ideas. He comes back to me with what he feels, this is great, change this, maybe go a different direction than that. Then I'll throw them together, we'll taste them, then I'll come to, you know, as I throw them together, I write down the recipes, and then if we like them, then you go into, you know, just breaking down the numbers, how much each dish costs, and then exactly right into how much you're going to charge for your plate. But it's definitely, I mean, it's a process. It takes us from paper to actually putting it on a plate, maybe about a month of back and forths and things like that. So it's fun, you know, it gives you an opportunity to really just step outside your normal and kind of look for something to have more fun with, to play with, just new creative ideas.
And what is it? I mean, the fall is supposed to just be heavier dishes. I mean, shanks versus chops. Is that basically what it is, or is it fruits and vegetables?
It's also, yeah, it's also getting into, like, the more of the vegetables. I mean, you definitely get into the heavier vegetables, you know, your root vegetables, your squashes, pumpkins, like that. Things that need maybe something a little more hearty than just a chicken, piece of chicken or roasted chicken to go with it. So you definitely tend to go with a little heavier meats, but we also try to stay real health conscious with our foods. We try not to go too heavy with our products as well.
And breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right? I mean, those are each. How many menu items stay consistent across those, and how many change?
Our dinner menu definitely makes the biggest changes. That's where you'll see the largest changes in our menu. Our brunch, our lunch menu, you'll see pretty significant changes coming into the fall as well. The breakfast, you know, kind of, it's more of like a staple thing. That comes from also him being a owner at Clinton Street. So you see, like, he's got, like, the French toast, like, we always have that, but the toppings will change. Pancakes we always have. They're a big staple for our place, so those always stay. You know, and it's a breakfast, so there's always omelets. We add and subtract different things to put inside of the omelets, but, you know, so that one, kind of, you see the smallest changes. There's just subtle changes to it, but the dinner menu you'll see a complete revamp on.
Very, very interesting. So what are you most excited about on the menu that people can go if they're listening and feel like going out? I mean, do you specials, right, with like a steak that changes every night?
A steak and a fish. We get different fish, whatever's selling good at the through the purveyor at the market. We'll change the fish up daily. The steaks, we change the cuts up. And then again, that goes back to whatever I'm finding at the market. Our specials are always run with green market vegetables. Mm-hmm. So just whatever I'm getting from the market at the time, we really try to incorporate that and make it fun. Change up the sauces, things like that. So there's, because we do have a certain amount of regulars that come in, so we like to make sure that they always have an option to get something that's, mm-hmm. you know, forever changing.
And are you... crossing into a different topic right now. Do you, now that things are happening and we're getting into the season, do you end up spending less time with your daughter? I know you have a little daughter that...
Yeah, definitely, you know, and it's also hard in the city, you know, it's so everything's so on demand so fast that I try to be at work as much as possible. And, you know, with a kid that as much as possible, you know, for restaurant hours is about the time that she's awake. So I get to see the back of her head while she's sleeping a lot, but, I always take 2 days a week, though, no matter what, you know, even if I have to take her into work with me. So I get to spend time with her to make sure that she gets enough father-daughter time.
That's great. And she likes hanging out at the restaurant?
Yeah, she's got a couple of good server friends she likes to chase around, and I have to, have to reel her back in so they can still do their job.
That's funny. Well, it is definitely a family atmosphere, and enough people don't go to community because of where it's located,
mm-hmm.
because it's really north, you know, Upper West Side. It is almost like saying Brooklyn or something, but it's such a special restaurant, and everybody loves how healthy and fresh it is. So I really recommend that people go and follow Stu's career as he, you know, brings his talents to the Upper West Side.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, thank you.
We've got an amazing staff, too, that really makes the clientele feel at home. We try to really just have that community vibe in our restaurant. You know, every person, it's really special, is really, really passionate about the restaurant itself. You know, everybody's there to make money, but in the middle, they all really care about the spot, and you can really feel it in the atmosphere of the place.
For sure. And also, you know, it's so great to go to the Upper West Side. I mean, walking around Columbia University campus is awesome.
Oh, it's beautiful. Even if you don't go there, you should go walk through it. It's really pretty to see. Once in a while, when I just want to clear my head, I'll go take a walk through it.
Yeah, I believe it. And then, you know, this is St. John the Divine, and then the northern tip of Central Park, which is, you know, the best part of Central Park. And then also all Broadway is just great. You go down to Zabar's and...
It's really up and coming. In the last year, 2 years, and even now, they're still just really doing a lot of work in that area. It's really starting to get a lot nicer.
How do you get to work? You take the crosstown bus on 110th?
That's how I get my exercise. It's about a 30-minute walk, a little under 2 miles, and I...
So you have to walk up that big hill, don't you?
I cut through Morningside Park. So it's a lot of stairs, but at least gets it over quick.
Oh, yeah. That is a huge drop from between Broadway and, like, Fifth Avenue and or whatever.
Morningside down there. Yeah, it's definitely it's probably about a 100-foot cliff in spots.
It's a great part of town. And then up to the north is the Cloisters and all that. I mean, it's an unvisited section of the city. Jack, when was the last time you were above 14th Street?
Probably when you took me to Community Food and Juice.
Okay, there it is. Well, Stu, best of luck, and thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks to all our listeners for listening, and stay tuned for the next show, which is the Mike and Judy Show, otherwise known as Arts and Seizures. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.